Well, hi there, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to the first new episode of 2025 of the Sustainable Minimalist Podcast. Yes, you are. Happy 2025, by the way. This is a show about intentional and eco-friendly minimalist living. And on today's show, we're questioning that new year, new you mantra that is pushed on so many of us in a commercialized society. When we prescribe to the new year, new you mantra, first of all, it can be quite enticing to do so, right? New year, fresh start. I'm going to fix all my problems. I'm going to fix everything that's wrong with me, right? The temptation to do that can be strong. However, I do find myself wondering whether we think there's so many things wrong with us that we need to fix in the new year. Is that a legitimate concern? Is that true? Or is that desire to fix all our problems a commercialized construct? Because remember, the media and advertising in particular, they do their best work when we feel bad about ourselves, when we identify perceived problems about ourselves that we feel like we need to fix. When we try to fix what we've been told is broken, that's when other people, other corporations make money. They take our money. And certainly, while there is a difference between self-improvement, trying to become the best person you can be versus just throwing up your hands and saying, oh, this is who I am. Who cares? I'm my messy self. There's a middle ground there. And today my guest and I are trying to nail that middle ground down. I want to know, can we become the best we can be without subscribing to the frankly untrue belief that, again, is pushed on us that we have problems we need to fix. We need to be skinnier. We need to read more books and get smarter. We need to be nicer. We need to volunteer more. Do we? Do we? So here to help me break all of this down, new year, same old wonderful you, perhaps, is Tyler Moore. This is Tyler's second appearance on our show. I'm so excited. Tyler has a book coming out next week. It's titled Tidy Up Your Life: Rethinking How to Organize, Declutter, and Make Space for What Matters Most. Tyler, welcome back. How are you? Tell me, what is going on in your life? Give me all the details. So excited to have you back.
Thanks, Stephanie. I'm so excited to be back. It's an exciting time in my life. I feel like as I'm preparing to launch my book into the world, it really is in some ways, I don't know, a culmination of a lot of the work that I've been doing over the years to try to provide people with practical tips on how to organize and tidy and clean while also just trying to have some semblance of self along the way. I feel like we all lead such busy lives that we're all looking for small ways to tidy things up. And even me, as I'm recording this, I'm still balancing teaching full-time with my three young daughters at the same school as me, which is exciting. I have two of them that wave to me. One of them will not wave to me, but we're still in our small 750 square foot apartment and just trying to navigate life and trying to see what we can tidy up along the way.
Yeah. But when you say tidy up, I think about the converse. I think about messiness. Life can be pretty darn messy, pretty darn hectic, pretty darn stressful. I want to tell you on air, Tyler, last time you were here, you mentioned that you walk your children to school every day. And that was a real beautiful moment in your days. It's like an anchor amidst the stress, amidst the craziness. And that's really stuck with me because I think what you were saying there was this small moment, seemingly small moment of having the freedom, having the space in your life to walk your children to school. And it sounds like you're walking yourself to school as well, perhaps. What a beautiful daily routine bonding moment you have with them. And so I think about you almost every morning when I walk my own children to the bus stop. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I could be cranky about all the things that went wrong this morning, about how we're seconds away from missing the bus, about how I have so much to do once they get on the bus. But I think of you and I think to myself, this is such a joy. This is such a gift to be able to walk them to the bus stop every day. So I just wanted to say that. I think about you.
That's really sweet. Yeah. There are a couple things to what you just mentioned there. Like I think of especially those morning time walks, I feel like every day is a fresh opportunity to start over and anew. That, like, I love morning time because there are so many possibilities of what could be. But also what you talked about is there's such joy in embracing the mundane and realizing that walking your kids to the bus stop, it's one of those mundane everyday tasks that you have to do. We always look forward to holiday breaks or summer breaks, but there is something about that sort of just like mundane rhythm of we all walk out together and we get to have those few moments before we move on to the busyness of our days that just is really beautiful. And so now that I get to share it with all three of my daughters, I don't know, it's just something that I look forward to every morning. Those are the little moments that they're always going to remember. And even if they don't, I'll remember it. Time is such a precious gift, and time really underlies the work that I do as Tidy Dad. And so I think even in the mundane, there's beauty to be found. Mm.
Those small moments are what make our lives. The big moments are great too, but it's the small moments that define a life. So you mentioned there embracing possibilities, and here we are, a new year. So exciting. The common phrase is new year, new you. We're going to maybe play on that a little bit today, but let's start with the resolution conversation. January for me tends to be like, oh, get my act together. Finally, at 40 years old, I'm going to be the person I aspire to be. What's one thing you are hoping to work on this coming year? What's your resolution? Just go ahead, be vulnerable, give it to us.
Yeah, especially coming out of this intense book writing season and book launching season, I do feel like I'm looking for a greater sense of rest and also just some open space in terms of time. That I feel like we all have those seasons. I call them sort of thrival seasons, where you're trying to survive while also trying to consciously thrive at the same time. We've had those really intense seasons where you're like, I really just want to stop and rest. And it's interesting because rest for me is not sitting still. I am not someone who just wants to sit and veg on the couch. Rest for me is saying to my wife a couple weeks ago, I really loved competing in my first triathlon last summer. My friends are doing one in Cape May, New Jersey in June, where you have to jump off a boat in the middle of the ocean and you swim a mile in and then you do your bike and your run. I think that's what I really want to do. And so she was sort of like, okay, if that's how you want to quote unquote rest, do it. I feel like rest for me is just having the space and time to pursue some of those things that just not only enrich my health, but just get me outside in nature and allow me to push myself or challenge myself in a new way. And I know that idea of rest, like, it does look different for everyone. Training for that Cape May triathlon really does sound restful and fun to me.
That's so interesting to me because you're using the word rest there, but it doesn't sound like rest to the rest of the world. I'll be completely honest. It sounds like what you're saying is that you want more time to push your boundaries for personal development, let's say. Maybe that is jumping off a boat a mile offshore and doing that triathlon. That sounds lovely. Go you. I want to see pictures. But for the rest of us, maybe we're not thinking about doing a triathlon in 2025. Maybe we're thinking about perhaps fixing something that we don't like about ourselves or reinventing ourselves. Those are big words. Before we talk about fixing or reinventing, I have big problems with both of those words. I want to talk about your concept of just enough. You talk about having a home that's just enough, having a life that's just enough in your book. So let's talk about that first, because I want to ultimately get to, like, how do we know when we, us, ourselves, our persons are just enough?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because even when you're talking about the example that I just gave of like training for the triathlon, like, it's one thing to say, oh, I would love to do this, but it's another thing to then think practically about what that means. What does that mean for my family? Like in my case, I have the three young daughters. What does it mean for my time? I'm a full-time teacher by day. What is that going to look like to train? Am I running in the afternoons? Am I doing a lot of this work on the weekends? How am I balancing work with my wife? Because I can't just say, all right, Emily, I'm going to be gone every Saturday for the next 12 weeks because I've got a triathlon to train for. That can happen. But that concept of just enough, what it does is it allows you to set some boundaries over certain categories or areas of your life that actually might help to make a bit of space. And for me, this school year, I'm at a new school. I switched schools from the previous one where I was. I had been there for 13 years, and I switched to a new school where the school day is a little bit shorter, where I have a longer time in the summer. I have the exact same schedule as all three of my daughters, which is something that we haven't had before. And so even that one decision of, I would like to switch schools to a school that's closer to my house. It's only six blocks away now. That inherently opens up time, that sets a boundary that allows for the space for these other things to happen. Because whether it's minimalism or tidying or setting boundaries with our time, our physical space, whatever it may be, so often we talk about, is it just like editing, editing, editing? Are we constantly just trying to remove so that we have the bare minimum of something? Whereas the flip of that, I feel like with this idea of just enough, is in which categories of life can you edit certain things in order to make space for the other things that you value or want to have the time and space to flourish, if that makes sense.
It definitely makes sense. And I'm thinking about the contrast of what you just said with what our culture tells us we should be striving for. We're told, we are conditioned, we are, dare I say, brainwashed to seek out more or better. But what I hear you saying is that when we're constantly striving for those cultural ideals of better or more, we then by default have no space to train for the Cape May triathlon. Is that right?
Yes. And yes. And the example that listeners may have experienced is, and because I've gotten it myself, where people say, oh, it must just be so nice to be off school in the summertime with your children. I have to do X, Y, or Z and just wish I were able to do that. Or people say, it must be nice to go on that vacation. I can't because we've decided to spend in like X, Y, or Z category. And what I've had to learn is the counter to that is to not, because it can be easy to give excuses or to try to make the other person feel better. But I've also learned to get a bit more bold and say, I'm able to do that because I made the decision to step back in my career and I'm not on the administrative track anymore. And I've decided that for this season of life, teaching is just enough for me. I really love what I do. And I also love the byproduct that I'm able to spend the summer with my kids. So there are trade-offs. And I think that so often it's hard to unpack sort of some of the feelings that we have or the questions that people ask us. And I have learned that sometimes I'm able to say, yeah, we went on the vacation because we're still driving a 2000 Chevy Malibu that I bought from my grandma for $500. The car's 25 years old, but it's still running. So why do I need that brand new car with all those bells and whistles when that would likely mean this exorbitant car payment, or it would mean that I would have to give something else up? Or because we're in New York City, it means that it gets hit all the time, or I'm not able to get it into a parking spot because I really need a small, compact car. So I do think that there are layers to this conversation of just enough, and we have to give ourselves permission that it's okay to set boundaries so that then other areas of our life can have space to grow and flourish.
Yes. All right. So you mentioned there are layers to our conversation, like an onion, right? We're going to peel back those onions and let's just do it. I really want to get to the bottom of you and I and listeners who are hearing us talk right now, how they can know when they are just enough, just like your salary is enough, or just like the 2000 Chevy Malibu is enough. I tend to be intrigued by the idea of New Year's resolutions because it's a fresh start. It's a new day for me to get my life together, basically. But I find myself, I just turned 40, I'm not thrilled about that, but I find myself wondering, wait a minute, am I just enough? Am I just fine the way I am now? Do I actually need to spend the entire next year improving upon my perceived flaws? There's a difference between personal development, like becoming the best you can be, versus becoming better because we think we're lacking. So how can we know if we're just enough the way we are right now?
Yeah. So I think that's such a deep question. And one of the things that I talk about in the book, it actually, there's a chapter on defining what is just enough. And then the follow-up chapter is about identifying your rhythms and routines for any sort of season of life. And one of the exercises that was really helpful for me that I talk about in the book is this idea of creating like a values wheel. And I did this with a coach that I have. She's a heart therapist. She helps me with my writing, but also helps me to balance life and work and all things Tidy Dad. But one of the exercises that she gave me when we first started work together was she invited me to list out what were my 8 core values. So what are the things that motivate me, drive me, interest me? And then she invited me to put these all on a wheel. And basically, I had to rank the degree to which I was actually living out any one of those core values. And what was really interesting to think about was the different play on the different values, how they were connected to one another. And some of my values were around service to others, family, acknowledgement or legitimacy, strategy, kindness, beauty, gaining influence, this idea of provision. Those values, they can all be things that really do motivate me personally. And I think for each of us, we all have different values, which makes family too so complex because my values aren't necessarily the same values as my wife or even the values of my children. And so we do have to reconcile those values with one another. But for example, if I have a priority around family, but yet I'm so focused on finance, that's inherently going to have an impact on the relationships that I have with my family, the time that I'm able to spend with them, which then could have a bigger impact on this value that I have around kindness or helpfulness. So I do think, you know, deep at the core to your question of, am I just enough? Or even, am I enough? Which is this huge, profound question. There is underlying that deeper values work, which I think can be then your litmus test to see, is the decision that I'm making in alignment with my idea of what is just enough? This promotion at work, what is that going to do to these other values? And it's not about balance per se, but it's the degree to which you want to be living out that particular value. So that's an exercise that I feel like when I've been really stressed or anxious, like it's helpful for me to go back to those values and then again do that check with myself of, okay, this week, to what degree am I in alignment with these values or not? And are there things that I can do to be more aligned, or what am I going to need to let go of in this moment of time?
Yeah. Yeah. What you're saying there is, first of all, know your values and then center your life around those values. Because again, life gets messy and stressful and muddled, and it's hard to see them. What would you say to the people who are unsure of the values? Because we're creatures of comparison, right? So we tend to look at others and then use our observations of others and then assess our own lives, our own priorities, our own selves. So I guess I would say it's hard to accept ourselves for who we are and center ourselves around our values if we're looking at everybody else and if we're looking at the way everybody else is doing things. And then by consequence, thinking we're lacking and we need to fix ourselves with our New Year's resolutions.
Absolutely. And one of the exercises in the book, and I use this, it's been very helpful in my own sort of like writer's notebook, is just this T chart of what do you feel like is currently working? And then the flip side of that is what is not working? And I feel like that is really revealing, that it's like, you can think about how you feel at the start of the day or the end of the day, thinking about what activities, be it at work or at home, gives you this feeling of joy or accomplishment. You could think about what obstacles do I currently face that are like getting in the way of things? Do routines that I currently have align with what I actually want for myself or for my family? Even thinking about how you allocate time. Like, how are you allocating time for self-care? How are you allocating time for work, for help or service to others? Even just brainstorming what's working in those areas and what's not. There's oftentimes some truth that you can find. And it's a really interesting sort of exercise to just get it down on a piece of paper and then start to like circle or star or underline what it is that you're noticing that then helps you carve out a plan for what can you do moving forward. Mm.
And people don't generally do this, right? At least the people.
No.
The people in my circle, I think we are just so bogged down by the stresses of day-to-day life that we don't have the time. I certainly, aside from doing this work as an intentional living advocate, like I don't have time. I don't make time to sit down and determine my values. I'm just trying to get to children's bedtime so that I can watch Netflix on the couch.
Yeah, which also isn't, and that also is an okay thing sometimes for different seasons. What I'm talking about relates to a decluttering sort of principle that I talk about in the book, is this idea of when people are like, how do I get started decluttering my closet? Okay, you got to start by clearing the space. Then you have to sort the stuff, assess what you want to keep, what you want to get rid of, and then move on to the plan. Then actually do something about it. And I think that so often when people talk about, I don't have the time to do X, Y, or Z, then they immediately, especially when we're talking about this mental clutter that we're talking about here, this idea of, am I enough? Am I just enough? What do I want from life? Those are huge questions. But so often we just jump straight to the plan of, I'm going to sign up for this. I'm going to say no to this. I'm going to start doing this. Let's do it all. But it's like when you go to the store and you're like, I'm going to buy all of these new organizing bins and then I'm going to bring them home and that closet is going to be amazing. But yet you haven't measured before you went to the store, or you didn't actually clear the closet to see what you have. And so I do feel like we have to give ourselves some mental space to begin to ponder or question, because that's when some things can be revealed to us. And the last thing that the world needs is unrealistic strategies or people trying to tell us how to do things better, how to be faster, how to be more efficient. I really am writing as Tidy Dad from this lens of, I have three kids. I have a full-time job as a teacher. I'm trying to balance marriage with having friends and questioning, as a 38-year-old adult, when is the last time that I just went out with my friends and had an adult conversation? When is the last time I went to the grocery store alone? Those are real deep questions. And so I have had to carve out these little pockets of time to step back, because I know that when I don't allow myself to step back, that's when I easily spiral into anxiety. That's something that I've struggled with for years. And it's so easy for me to get into that anxiety spiral. But oftentimes what will pull me out is a moment of reflection. What's working versus what not can be a strategy that can snap me out of the moment and help me figure out what could actually be the plan for moving forward.
I like that. And I like that when we perceive that something's off or, dare I say, wrong, the solution can be a plan for moving forward. The solution does not have to be fixing something that we perceive or that society perceives is wrong with ourselves. The media, advertising in particular, loves to make us consumers feel bad about ourselves, because when we feel bad about ourselves, we spend money in hopes of fixing what we've been told is broken, right? But then there's the other point here, which is that we, as a culture, we love our quick fixes. We jump straight to the plan. We jump straight to buying the organizational bins as opposed to stopping, thinking about our space, thinking about how we want it to look before acting. We act first and then think later. I am so guilty of this.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny, I sometimes think of New Year, New You for many is like New Year, dare I say, screw you. January 1st comes right after. For the majority of us, we have just come through an intense holiday season, factoring on also if you have kids, you have just survived back to school, that slog from August or September through December that is so challenging and tough. And yet everyone is so tired, but then it's, oh, January 1st comes. Oh my gosh, this is the day where I stay up late, throw my New Year's Eve party, and then the next morning I am flipping the switch and it is all positivity. And I'm going to do it all and I'm going to be it all. And that's when quickly that other phrasing of the new year, new you can come in. And I feel like we put pressure on ourselves to get it all right at the same time. And I think that's what sets people up for failure, because you can't do it all. You can't be it all. You can't revamp it all at the start of the new year. And so one of the things that has been helpful for me is that I have a friend named, her name's Patty Morrissey, and she works for Marie Kondo. But one of the philosophies that she talks about a lot is this idea of a 30-day experiment, that like, instead of just thinking about, I'm going to revamp all of these things at once, what she encourages people to do is to think of each month as you go throughout the year as an opportunity to experiment with a routine. It could be a routine around the house. It could be a routine related to self. It could be a routine related to work or family. And then set intentions around that routine, but experiment with it for 30 days like a scientist would. Scientists, they start experiments with the hypothesis. They don't know how it's going to end up. They have a question in mind. And one of the experiments that I tried several years ago was, I'm going to go 30 days without watching any screen time in the evenings once I put the girls to bed. That was naming the experiment. What was my hypothesis? My hypothesis was, is not having screen time in the evenings going to help me sleep better? Is it going to allow me to read more books? Am I going to feel less anxious or overwhelmed? I experimented with it for 30 days. Now, did some of those hypotheses turn out to be true? Yes. But what was also true was I really missed a few of my TV shows. And so at the end of that 30 days, I decided, you know what, I'm going to try just having screen time on the weekends and try to eliminate it during the work week. And so when you try to experiment with certain things, as opposed to just saying, I'm making this list of resolutions and I'm doing them all right now, I feel like it does invite that opportunity for you to learn something new about yourself or learn something new about your way of thinking, or see, does this actually lead to a positive change or does it not? And if it doesn't, then move on to the next experiment. So that's been something that's been very freeing for me as I think about, what do I want to do? How do I want to experiment? And my triathlon from last summer, it literally started as a 30-day experiment for the month of July. And the experiment was to train for a triathlon. And the hypothesis or the question that I had in mind was, am I actually going to enjoy swimming, biking, and running? And that was it. And so at the end of it, I was like, yeah, this is fun. And I continued on with it in my future.
I like that. And what I like about it is you're approaching the New Year's resolution through the lens of curiosity. You're not approaching it through the lens of there's something wrong with me that must need to be fixed. And instead of revamping everything, you're choosing one, perhaps, behavior that you can improve upon, let's say. And that's what human psychology says is the best way to do it. Instead of saying, this is wrong about myself, instead of saying, I don't know, I want to be less wasteful, you instead say, I am going to buy less, right? Like, instead of attacking a perceived trait within you, you are instead changing a behavior. And so I like all that and I'm on board. But Tyler, we have to talk about the social comparison piece, because I feel like a lot of what we're talking about today goes against the grain. We are, again, creatures of comparison, creatures who are dependent upon fitting in socially. How can we live true to the value system that you so aptly mentioned earlier, when our values are often in conflict with conventional norms? And how can we do so, you know, with a smile on our face?
It's a great question, because so one of the reels that went viral for me as Tidy Dad last year was people were very upset about my three daughters sharing a bedroom and the fact that they have a triple bunk bed. I was like, you know what's funny about this? I was like, in American culture, for some reason, everyone tells us that every kid must have their own bedroom. But yet, for the majority of parents, their goal is for their children to someday go to college and quite possibly live in a dorm room where they're then going to have to share a bedroom, in many cases with a complete stranger, and may also add, sleep in a bunk bed. So I put up this video where I showed the triple bunk and then I showed a college dorm room. So it got a lot of attention at first. And then after about 6 weeks, I started to get the most hateful posts, the most hateful comments on it. And it was people telling me that I was a horrible dad, that my children are going to hate me, that they're all going to resent me, that they're never going to come and visit me. And then on each of these, whenever people would comment, I would like click on their profile. They weren't people that were following me. And then I quickly learned that they were all these teenage or early 20s kids who I guess had been really upset about either sharing a room or not sharing a room. I don't know what it was, but they were taking out so much of their anger and rage on me. And that video has incited this debate. And I feel like, to your question, I have had to grow a thick skin. And whether you have a social media presence or not, sometimes your neighbors that you run into on the street can be just as vicious as the online trolls, or that mother-in-law who's constantly asking you questions, or that coworker that you're with asking you things about the vacations you've taken, or why are you still living in that small house, or don't you want to be doing more with your life? Or if you're a parent who's staying home and saying, when someone says to you, oh, it must be so nice to be off all the time, I wish that I had the flexibility and just time to myself like you do. We get these judgments all the time. And so I do think it goes back to those values that we were talking about at the start. And when you are just so clear on your why for the decisions that you've made, and oftentimes the why is rooted in what it allows you to do, I feel like that's where you're able to have a bit of the confidence to speak back when people ask questions or when you find yourself judging others. Because I fall into those traps too. I look at my 2000 Chevy Malibu and my three children who are sandwiched along the back seat and them oftentimes parking at the swimming pool. And what pulls up next to me is this huge, beautiful SUV with three rows and the TVs in the back seat. And the fact that you don't even have to have a key. Like, people now just walk up to their cars and it opens. And I'm like, oh my gosh, when is the last time I changed the battery so that I can pop open the trunk and not have to stick the key in the trunk to get my pool bag out? And I question all the time. And my kids have asked me, they're like, Daddy, why don't we drive a car like that? And I've had to learn how to say to them, you know what? Your mommy and I, that's a beautiful car, isn't it? I can appreciate something that somebody else has. But you know what? I also really love that we're able to do X, Y, or Z. And mommy and I just made choices that are a little bit different from other people. But then I always follow it up with, and someday you're going to get to make choices for yourself too. And that's a beautiful thing about life. You can choose where you want to live. You can choose what type of job you want to have or what car you want to have. And if you want this 2000 Chevy Malibu, maybe I'll sell it to you for $500 and we'll just keep it going because that car is going to run forever. That's what I'm manifesting now in 2025, that my car is just going to keep running.
Tyler, what an answer. I wrote so many notes on that. I am ready to just punch walls because you've fired me up. Yeah, we all get these external judgments via your viral Instagram post, but we also put these judgments on ourselves. And you were so vulnerable and honest with the Chevy Malibu. So I'm just going to say for myself, I'll just put it out there. Let's all just be vulnerable here. I feel like there's something hollow, something sick with comparing ourselves to these external ideals. For you, it's having the car that opens itself. For me, I'm always struggling with the money issue. Like in America, we're taught and told that the amount of money you make is directly equivalent to your worth. And just thinking about this podcast, before when the podcast was in its heyday and I was making money and the money was consistent, I felt amazing about myself, right? Like I felt smart and competent and important. But since the podcast bubble has burst, then the financial strain plus the feelings of shame and inadequacy I feel that is tied to not being good enough because of the lack of money coming in, it doesn't feel great. So I guess my point here is dig out the root and come to the values, because the values will not lead you wrong. Consistently push back against the societal reverence for the new car, for the money as being tied to worth, because we are creatures of comparison, like you and the car and people in your triple bunk bed, me and the money, right? Hitching yourself to some external marker of success is not a great long-term strategy, because luck changes and self-worth and values, they stick around. So that's my soapbox. Go for it.
Yes. And one thing that I would add is that same coach that I did work around with my values, she talked about so often people continue to move the goalpost. And it's like the classic with your podcast, that if the goal was to make a bunch of money, okay, then that is what the goalpost was that you put in the sand. But knowing you, that wasn't your initial goal with starting your podcast. It's just, you know, numbers wise, it's when people talk about the book, like people are constantly like, how are book sales going? How are book sales going? Are you going to make all the lists? And I, from the start, a book, obviously, you want people to read your book. Like I just spent 2.5 years writing it, but that is not or has never been the goal for me, because I have chased numbers before. And where did chasing numbers leave me? In a mental health breakdown where I then had to enter therapy for 3 years. I had to take leave from my job. Then I decided to step back. Like those external numbers, there's always going to be a number that is higher. And what I know personally about myself is anytime I see a number, I immediately get a twinge of disappointment. And I'm like, oh, but it could have been higher. Or if only I had worked harder or I had done more. Or if do people just not like me? And so I've had to set a boundary for myself. And I don't look at certain numbers around things because it's not motivating to me. It only discourages me. So I do think we have to know those things about ourselves and not constantly move that goalpost.
So the take-home message, listeners, is there's nothing wrong with you. You don't need to fix yourself to reach some, again, external goalpost. You are great just the way you are. If there's things you want to improve upon the behavior. Don't seek to improve upon the personality trait. And certainly don't seek to do so because our culture tells you you should. Do you have anything to add there?
No, I just feel like we should get that whole statement printed on a t-shirt that's backwards so that when we're standing in the mirror, we can say it back to ourselves. That was really helpful for me to hear because I think underlying this is like, you are enough. We are. And there is joy in experimenting and finding new things. There's also joy in taking rest. And there's also joy in knowing, like for me, the month of March, I don't do anything self-related. I am not motivated to do anything. It's cold. It's dark. I'm ready for spring to come. But come April, I always feel better about myself. And so there are certain seasons of life and seasons of the year where you just aren't feeling it. And you know what? That's okay too.
Well, Tyler, tell us, your book comes out January 7th. It's titled Tidy Up Your Life, Rethinking How to Organize, Declutter, and Make Space for What Matters Most. What can we find in it? Where can we find it? Give us those details.
Yeah, so you can order it wherever books are sold. In it, it's broken up into two parts. The first part is Tidy Up Your Mind, which explores a lot of what we talked about here today. The second half is Tidy Up Your Space, where we're going room by room and thinking about the systems for organizing and tidying and cleaning, which I really find fun. But I hope that it's a book that just inspires people really to make space for what matters most and allow themselves to experiment and try new things, but also just embrace the beautiful mess that is life.
I love it. It is a beautiful mess. And guess what? We're messy creatures, but we are also beautiful. I think we really honed in on that today. Tyler, I cannot wait to see you on the Today Show. I'm so excited. Send me that when it comes out.
Yes. No, thanks so
and
much.
And Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year. Thank you for coming on.
You too. Thanks.
Listeners, that's a wrap. Show notes at mamaminimalist.com/512. I'm not sure I have anything to add here except Happy New Year. Maybe this is the year where instead of trying to fix everything that we don't like about ourselves or fix what we think is broken, maybe 2025 is the year we give ourselves grace and accept ourselves fully, warts and all. I'm going to work on it. I'll report back in 6 to 12 months. Keep me in your thoughts. I'll see you next week for another episode. Reach out if you need me and take care.